Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. Yes, we are video streaming tonight, so if you want to have the thrill of watching me sit here, just go to MikeMalloy.com and click on Malloy Vision. Been a lot of focus on this disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, and we're going to pay that little bit of attention again tonight. But there is something else that I had no idea occurred last night. Maybe you knew about this. But late last night, according to Zach Carter at the Campaign for America's Future, late last night, the U.S. Senate rejected the single most important element of Wall Street reform by a vote of 33 yes, 61 no. It was the SAFE, S-A-F-E, Safe Banking Act. And it would have forced the breakup of the nation's six largest banks and dramatically reduced the political clout of America's financial elite. Now, the 61 votes against the measure, in other words, are votes in favor of Wall Street's stranglehold on our economy. Anyone doubt that we live in a corporatist society? Oh, my God. No matter what else is ultimately enacted in the name of Wall Street reform, Congress has decided with that vote last night that it will not confront the single greatest problem in the U.S. economy, and that is these financial institutions that are too big to fail. Now, on Wednesday, the day before, the Senate also voted down a $50 billion Wall Street tax that would have been used to fund the cost of shutting down major failing banks. By rejecting both the breakup bill and the bank tax, the Senate has dropped back 10 yards and punted where it concerns the too big to fail problem. I mean, I had no idea this happened. This is really, I mean, it's a terrible, terrible situation. Anyway, as Zach Carter writes, for now, it appears that Wall Street, the catch-all term for this filthy, predatory, capitalistic banking industry, Wall Street has emerged from the great financial crash of 2008 with even greater political might than it had during the reign of George W. Bush. Apparently, both Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate have decided they can only get so tough with corporate America. Corporate America wins. I don't know why we continue to pretend like we live in a representative democracy. I really don't. I guess it's the same reason we all continue to watch Super Bowls. You know, I couldn't care less about professional football. It's a place where young men go to get brain damaged and wind up with Parkinson's disease or be paralyzed or whatever. But I do watch the Super Bowl. I don't know why I watch the Super Bowl. I just do. I guess it's the same reason that I vote. I know damn good and well that when I go in and vote for the Democratic candidate in whatever race I'm voting in, that it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. But I guess what I'm looking for is to see, you know, the television coverage, the excitement, like at the Super Bowl, the excitement. Ooh, did the Democrats win? Oh, I hope the Republicans didn't win. Ooh, are the Democrats winning? I wonder how much longer we're going to keep kidding ourselves about this. Right? Last night, 27 Democrats, and 27 Democrats and all but three Republicans who were voting, voted against breaking up the banks. Now, Barack Obama, had he been able to vote, he would have voted the same way. He's opposed to both the tax and the breakup measure. Not only that, did you know this? Monday night, there was a dinner at the White House where Barack Obama hosted The CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon. I just about give up. J.P. Morgan is the largest U.S. bank and spent more money on lobbying in 2009 than any other bank. House Minority Leader John Boehner has tried and tried to get Jamie Dimon to give him campaign funds. Meanwhile, Dimon is being wined and dined in the White House by Barack Obama. So, as Zach Carter points out, there is literally no economic evidence at all that these mega banks do anything to help the economy that can't be accomplished with smaller institutions. And by contrast, centuries of research has shown that giant banks are destructive. The sainted Adam Smith was warning against the dangers of mega banks back in the 18th century. 18th century, folks. There are plenty of good economic reasons to cut our financial behemoths down to size and no good reasons not to. But the Senate last night voted 31, or was it 33 to 61 to allow these bastards to continue. 27 Democrats voted to continue this corporate stranglehold. By allowing the mega banks, Zach Carter writes, to remain supersized, Congress has insulated them from the fallout associated with the Fed disclosures and given them a tool to fight other reforms. Not only are these banks now too big to fail, they are too big to regulate. It's just astonishing. And then Carter provides, or the Campaign for America's Future provides, the people who voted against regulating the banks. John Kerry, Lautenberg, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, Menendez of New Jersey, Nelson of Florida, Nelson of Nebraska, Harry Reid, or no, no, that's not Harry Reid, never mind. Schumer, I'm just giving you the Democrats, some of the Democrats. Who else? Baucus, Bayh of Indiana. Conrad of North Dakota. Christopher Dodd of Connecticut. Feinstein of California. Gillibrand of New York. Inouye of Hawaii. Those are just some of the Democrats. If you want the whole list, go to the Campaign for America's Future. So as far as preventing this continuous onslaught against the American consumer, here's proof that it's going to continue. I'll be damned. Have we got any Red Hot Chili Peppers that have a lot of the F-bomb in it? We do? Okay, let's play some of that during the break. Oh, my God. 27 Democrats said, nah, we don't want no stinking reform. Oh, well. So I guess we'll just sit here on the radio program. We have the situation in... by the way, the Iceland volcano is starting up again. Did you see that, Kathy? Yeah, it's starting to spew more clouds of toxins into the air. You better get saved, girl. You better go get your nails done and get ready to rapture. You better go get your hair done. Amen. We'll be right back.
talk radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
But 21 past the hour. Susan in sunny Squim, Washington writes, Mike, I'm so sick of the Democrats in Congress complaining that the reason we are totally screwed is the fault of the lobbyists for the banks and big business. They are the ones taking the money and they are the ones elected by the people. Just because someone offers them a bribe and just because it's legal, does that mean they have to take it? Yes, the corporatists are self-serving scumbastards, but the damned elected officials are taking the money. Remember when you were a kid and your mom yelled at you for doing something and you said, but mom, Johnny, all of them were doing it. And she said, if Johnny jumps off the bridge, will you? It's like that, Mike. Our representatives have to stop following Johnny. I am so sick of all the bastards on both sides of this. Yeah, I know. I know. All right, to cheer you up, here's a missive from our economics correspondent, Prairie 2, who writes, the subject line is, they gazed down on the village nervously. You know, up in the castle. Japan held its stock market to only a 3% drop Friday by openly dumping 2 trillion yen into the market. That's about $21 billion. European markets didn't do as well and were down as much as 4%. The Dow dropped 300 points early, but clawed back up to only 140-point loss today. The facts, such as they are, from yesterday's panic are getting stranger as the data are analyzed. It seems 6 stocks plunged from respectable prices to pennies, and at least one rose 100 times its normal price. Regulators can and will void anomalous trades. They said immediately that there's nothing wrong with the system, but hacking must come to mind. The SEC is on Thursday's market plunge like a hen on a June bug, suspecting that somebody made a killing by driving down Procter & Gamble stock. Perhaps Wall Street wasn't aware that the SEC is now run by Democrats, not Republicans who will look at the porn sites. So there is now bandwidth available to track illegal trades and crack down on market manipulation. Wall Street was probably calmed somewhat today by the positive job numbers, even though they prefer higher unemployment. They are starting to wonder if the villagers will come with torches instead of bailouts. They've had several of their banks burned in Greece. Republicans are now seeing their "Where are the jobs?" chant go the way of "Drill, baby, drill." And those death panels have yet to materialize. Obama's successful diplomacy with the Chinese has slowed the exodus of U.S. jobs, with China freezing the expansion of factories aimed at exporting to the U.S., and they promised currency reform. Wall Street is floating the rumor that China will renege on that policy with the Greek debt crisis looming, but there's no indication from the Chinese that they will. It wouldn't seem likely to serve China's interest to change course after all the considerable effort they have applied to shift the dragon to domestic growth. That would be a good thing. The 290,000 new jobs announced today sound good, but that only covers 2 months of population increase. It will take 12 years at that rate to replace the jobs lost in the last 2 years. Since there are plans to lay off 300,000 teachers by the end of May, we aren't gaining very much. Big business doesn't plan to bring back jobs, and small business is being squeezed out by big business through imports, outsourcing, and wage suppression. Reform will only come when the villagers are mad enough to pay attention to the castle up on the hill. Prairie2.com. Yeah. I don't know, man. I spend most of my days now just trying to figure out what the hell is going on. And I'm not very good at that. And coming up after this break, we at the Huffington Post, Dan Frumkin, who writes there quite a bit, of course, points out that this Gulf oil spill, or it's not a spill, this eruption is a symbol of what fossil fuels do to the Earth every day, according to environmentalists. You know, it's just that we get to see it all at once when it floods into the Golfo de Mexico. And also, right after the break, coming back from the break, podcast trivia. Huh? Yeah, let's do it right now. When we come back from the break, I have in my hands, ladies and gentlemen, the list of questions. Nobody's ready. What are you talking about? Yes, we do. You watch what happens when you open the phones. Kathy says, we don't have enough listeners now. Let's do it next hour. No, let's do it right away. I have in my hands, ladies and gentlemen, right here, the list of trivia questions. If you can get one right, you will win a one-year subscription to Malloy commercial-free podcast downloads. So get online now, 877-996-2556. We'll be right back. Paid week's tour to Paris, Kentucky, where you'll arrive in your brand new Hummer limousine. No, I'm just kidding. What you get tonight, if you get the right answer, is a one-year subscription to Malloy program podcasts, downloads, commercial-free, absolutely money-free, commercial-free. Normal cost is just under $60, which makes this worth 25 cents a program. Let's start with Rick, who's in Los Angeles, listening online. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm fair to partly cloudy. How about you?
Pretty good, thanks.
All right. Here's your question. Which of the following notable neocons is not a self-professed drug or alcohol abuser? Is it A, Rush Limbaugh, B, Glenn Beck, C, Lindsey Graham, or D, Franklin Graham?
It's Lindsey Graham.
Well, that was quick. All right. That is correct. All right. Lindsey Graham is the only one of those four who's not a self-professed. I was looking at some of the online information about Franklin Graham, and apparently his coke use has been expunged, and what's taken the place of it is the word carousing. Carousing. All right, Rick, hold on. Kathy, yeah, coke and carousing both start with C, so I guess it's, you know. Anyway, hold on, Rick. Kathy will get the pertinent information, and thank you very much for playing and for winning. See how easy that is? Oh, hey, Kathy.
Why, as a matter of fact, Mike, I do.
Oh, good. Okay. Kathy has the names of a couple of people who have contributed to podcasts.
We would like to thank William Lorsch of Joliet, Illinois, for the donation of a podcast subscription.
Thank you, William.
Thank you, Bill. Who else do we have to thank? We also have to thank Cochran, B. Cochran, initial B, for a podcast subscription, is from... Squamish, British Columbia.
Oh, like Squamish.
Squamish.
Beverly Cochran.
Oh, okay.
From Squamish, British Columbia.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, Beverly.
And William.
Thank you, Bill.
And yes, thank you.
And if you would like to donate a podcast subscription for a needy truth seeker and support the Mike Malloy Show, click on the subscribe button at MikeMalloy.com for simple instructions.
Well, it's not just for a needy Mike Malloy listener, just
worthy.
Somebody who wants to win one. Worthy is the better word, right? Okay, all right. Anyway, thanks to those two people who had sent in podcast subscriptions to go into the thingy here. Dan Frumkin, as promised, writing at the Huffington Post. I'm sure you've read his stuff before. He points out what you all already know, that the leading edge of this oil slick started to come ashore in Louisiana last night. A shroud of devastation falling on America's coastline, even as the blown-out BP oil well that produced it continues to belch millions upon millions of gallons of crude into the Gulf of Mexico for a third straight week. Do you realize we're in the third week on this? As Frumkin writes, at moments like this, it's hard to see any silver lining here at all, but it's possible that there is one. Tell me, Dan, quick, please. Jesus, tell me. Many environmentalists say that the wrenching and omnipresent images of filth and death are at least providing Americans with visible, visceral, and possibly mobilizing evidence of the effects that fossil fuels are having on our environment every day. Rick Steiner is a University of Alaska marine specialist. He's horrified at the damage. He's watched cleanup efforts ever since the Exxon Valdez spill in 1989, and he's learned some bitter lessons. He says, quote, government and industry will habitually understate the volume of the spill and the impact, and they will overstate the effectiveness of the cleanup and the response. There's never been an effective response ever where more than 10 or 20% of the oil is ever recovered from the water. Once the oil is in the water, the damage is done. End quote. And most of the damage, Steiner points out, Rick Steiner, most of the damage remains invisible deep below the surface, including the wide-scale destruction of essential plankton in the area and the wiping out of an entire generation of fish larvae. Steiner said this is really, really toxic stuff. But the damage that is visible, what we've been seeing on the television, that vast and foul oil slick, the dolphins swimming through sludge, birds coated in oil, the dead fish and sharks and turtles, is enough to thoroughly disgust anyone paying attention, wouldn't you think? And that, says Rick Steiner, University of Alaska marine specialist, that makes it a teachable moment that hopefully will serve as a wake-up call that we need to turn to sustainable energy and away from this poison. After all, as Dan Frumkin points out, the carbon that we're seeing poison the Gulf was headed into the planetary ecosystem anyway, just through our tailpipes and our smokestacks. Steiner said, that's part of the irony of all this. It just took a shortcut. This carbon took a shortcut into the environment from what it normally does, and it's obvious to people what the problem is here. And now Steiner and his fellow environmentalists think this spill provides an opportunity not just to revisit offshore oil drilling, but the whole carbon dynamic. Bill McKibben, the environmentalist writer, and by the way, if you haven't gone to his website, 350.org, that stands for amount of toxic crap in the atmosphere, you need to go to McKibben's website. I'm sure most of you are familiar with it, but 350.org, 350.org. Anyway, McKibben says, quote, this just reminds us in a powerful way how dirty the energy we rely on really is. If anything good is going to come out of this, it'll be because it focuses our attention but more palpably focuses the president's attention on questions of dirty energy. McKibben also has a book out called Earth, with two A's in it, E-A-A-R-T-H, Earth, Making a Life on a Tough New Planet. It's about adjusting to this changed world that we're all living in now. McKibben told Huffington Post, quote, our problem is not primarily that there's a stuck valve in the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. That's a terrible problem. But the bigger problem is that there's a stuck economy based on fossil fuels, and the president hasn't really done anything major yet to fix it. The problem is that the whole system is dirty from beginning to end. McKibben said the Senate has been cobbling together kind of tepid, or my word would be half-assed, climate change bills, while Obama sits on the sidelines. McKibben said, quote, now's the moment when he, Obama, could galvanize the nation. He could say, let's really learn from what's happened in the Gulf. Let's think about the way that we're turning all the oceans of the world acid at a rapid rate by pouring carbon into the atmosphere. Let's think not only about those coal miners in West Virginia, but also about what burning coal is doing to people all over the world. McKibben adds that it's a moment of reckoning. He says, we'll find out in the next couple of weeks whether Obama is serious about an energy transformation or whether he's as corporatist and cautious on this as he appears to be on just about everything else. But if you haven't gone to 350.org, I strongly recommend that you go to that website. It's very radical. Very critical, the information that you'll find there. 350.org. Oh, and, you know, you've heard the stories, and they're not apocryphal about BP executives swarming, not the executives, but people who work for BP, swarming over the Gulf Coast trying to get shrimpers and oystermen and fishermen and people that rely on the sea for a living to get them to sign those waivers. And then it made it into media, and BP immediately stopped and pretended like they were reprimanding whoever ordered that and said, oh, well, no, that's not a very good idea. So they stopped it. Well, to show you how filthy BP really is, regardless of their advertising campaigns over the past 6 or 7 years, and how typically capitalist they are. Remember what we've been talking about in this program. Capitalism sees human beings the same way it sees any kind of pollution, as just disposable, just throw it away. It doesn't matter. Human beings, oil gushers into the environment, trash, depleted uranium, poison atmosphere, all of it's the same. All of it's the same. Wait till I tell you what they asked the oil rig workers to do. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. All right, let's get this out of the way. Stan is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hi, Stan.
How you doing, Mike?
Pretty good.
So, I'm trying to figure out what you are, actually.
Why? What in your life compels you to figure out what I am? Do you know what you are?
Oh, absolutely.
What are you?
I'm a man.
Well, you don't...
Politically, I'm a conservative. but I'm trying to figure out where you actually fall.
Why do you care? Why do you care, Stan, what I am? Is your life so empty that you have to try to figure me out?
Absolutely, Mike. My life's so empty.
I'll tell you what. Why don't you do something?
Like this?
Oh, my God. Why don't you do something to make your life have a little bit more meaning? To sit there in the darkness in Minneapolis. Look, you got theaters there, you got bars, you got restaurants. I don't know if you date anybody, but you could take your boyfriend or your girlfriend and go someplace. But you have to sit there, and I appreciate the fact you listen to the program, but you have to sit there and worry your little brain about what I am? Come on, Stan, give it a rest. For heaven's sake, get a life. What are you, Mike? Stan, I am your worst enemy. I am somebody who believes in the truth, whose brain has not been scrubbed. Like yours, Stan! Can you imagine, would you do that? Would you sit, Kathy, would you sit around and wait to call a radio program to ask, you know, where are you? What are you?
Well, I did call your show once or twice before we met.
Well, that was because you... Do you think this guy wanted from me the same thing you wanted from me?
You never
all those
know.
Years ago?
You never know. Huh? You know, and a couple of times I had to wonder. I thought, you know, I thought maybe you were pitching for the other team.
Because, well, at one time I did.
You used to talk about your partner. My partner and I went to a Braves game. My partner and I were at dinner the other night, and I thought, okay, well, he's one of these
switch hitters,
exactly, who was married and has a couple of kids,
and decided he would go to the other side,
you know, unlucky for me, but lucky for some man out there like our last caller who sits in the dark in Minnesota
and wonders, what is Mike Malloy? What is Mike Malloy? Is he a Mason? Is he
an alien?
Is he an alien? Is he gay? Is he not gay? Is he... Ooh! Get a life, Stan! Now, where were we before? The guy called in. I had to take his call. But now it's finished. Stan, do me a favor. Don't ever call again, all right? Because you're boring and you're kind of a dumbass. So just... This is from NPR, their website, npr.org. This is really an incredible story. Hours after they had been rescued, the workers who survived the explosion on the oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico were asked to sign form letters about what they had seen and whether they had been injured. Lawyers for the oil rig's owner, it's owned by Transocean. That's the rig's owner. The drilling was done by BP. Anyway, the lawyers for Transocean requested that workers who had survived the blast sign the form in the wake of that blowout on the Deepwater Horizon. This was hours before the workers had been allowed to see their families. Now some of those survivors say they were coerced and that the forms are being used against them as they file lawsuits seeking compensation for psychiatric problems and other injuries from the blast. A Houston attorney who represents some of the survivors, a guy named Stephen Gordon, said, quote, the form that BP made them sign, Transocean made them sign, had, quote, I was here when it happened. I didn't see anything on it. Or I saw this and I was or was not hurt. A pre-printed form letter was handed to the workers, and they were asked to fill in the date, name, address, where he was at the time of the evacuation. And then there were two paragraphs at the end. One said, I was not a witness to the incident requiring the evacuation and have no firsthand or personal knowledge regarding the incident. The second paragraph says, I was not injured as a result of the incident or evacuation. Now, the men were asked if they agreed to initial those statements. Documents show those initials are now being used against the survivors as they file lawsuits seeking payment for emotional distress and other claims. Attorney Gordon says, quote, when we were hired by one of the survivors, we gave notice to Transocean's lawyers, and the immediate response was, wow, we're surprised. Here's a statement that says your guy wasn't hurt. Gordon and his partner, attorney Kurt Arnold, each have one client who has received letters from Transocean in the past few days. Attorney Arnold says asking the men to sign those forms was coercive. He said the request came more than 24 hours after the rescue, after the men had seen 11 of their friends die in the explosion and chaos of that night, and after they had run to lifeboats to try to save their own lives. Arnold's clients aren't speaking publicly, but have described the scene to him. He says, quote, "It's extremely gruesome. I mean, one of the guys told me that as he's running out on the platform, there's guys burning and some of the guys missing limbs. It was like a war zone." Anyway, the two attorneys say the survivors were kept on the water in boats or on another rig for 15 hours or more. When they did get to shore, they were zipped into private buses. There was security there. There were no press, no lawyers allowed, nothing, no family members. They drove them to this hotel. They escorted them into the back of the hotel, once again under escort, and tried to get them to force them to sign these agreements. This is how Transocean and BP and the rest of these predatory capitalist bastards work. Huh? We'll be right back. It is 7 past the hour. Duncan in Redding, California, sent me an email. Mike, heard Bobby Kennedy and Papantonio talking about this other rig in the Gulf of Mexico. Can you imagine what would happen if this one has a problem? And Duncan sends me a link to the Houston Chronicle. And it says that BP is facing an ongoing federal probe over concerns that the oil giant illegally cut safety corners in Russian completion of its massive Atlantis offshore production platform, described by BP as the deepest oil production platform in the world. Atlantis. The allegations have been raised by 19 members of Congress, a Houston-based safety expert, and a whistleblowing contractor, and a Washington, D.C. nonprofit organization. BP began operations at the Atlantis platform in October 2007 at a site about 124 miles offshore in 7,000 feet of water. The current disaster is in 5,000 feet, 7,000 feet of water, and expanded production last year, according to government records in BP's annual report. The allegations against the company suggest the company rushed into production by skipping or skimping required engineering inspections, putting profits ahead of the need to protect workers from accidents and the environment. No! Profits ahead of worker safety and protecting the environment? Oh, my God! Somebody, quick, dial 911. This is the first time that's ever happened. Or not. And also it says they did not do the required due diligence about potentially catastrophic oil spills, according to allegations sent to regulators. Oh, my God. Darren Bodo, B-E-A-U-D-O, Bodo, a BP spokesman, insists the company designed and built the platform to, quote, meet global industry engineering standards, like the one at your other place there, Darren, including review and approval of project design and construction procedures by professional engineers. We've done it all, and BP has found no evidence to substantiate the organization's claims with respect to Atlantis. You know, I'm sure they probably could have said that about the current disaster. Right? My God. Yeah, this only happens once out of every how many events? Yeah, sure. Okay. So anyway, the in a February 24th letter, way back in February, 19 U.S. representatives from Arizona, New Jersey, Mississippi, Florida, California, Massachusetts, and other states all requested a formal investigation of BP's Atlantis platform, an investigation by the Minerals Management Service, MMS. The letter says the MMS has an obligation and a duty to ensure that natural resource extraction from public lands and the outer continental shelf is done with the utmost concern for the environment and the health and safety of workers and the public. It is critical we get this right. Yo, okay. Well, you hear, members of Congress, what BP says. A spokesman for BP insists that the company designed and built the platform to meet. See, this is the weasel part. Here are the weasel words. We built it and designed it to meet global industry engineering standards, including review and approval of project design and construction procedures, just like we did with the one that's destroying the Gulf of Mexico now. And then we had 61 senators vote last night to not restrict the predators on Wall Street. Ever feel like you, thanks, Duncan, for the email. Man. Dr. Stephen Jonas sends out an email every once in a while. Hello, everyone. Well, when I wrote this one last Monday, a lot of stuff in it was still fairly fresh. However, our side has been at this one with the vengeance, thank goodness. So now a lot of it is not fresh. However, it's a good summary of some of the juicier bits about BP and Halliburton. So if you've not had the time to keep up, consider this one one-stop shopping. Oh, yes, one item not in it is that while we were originally told that the oil in this case was rather lighter than that spewed forth from the Exxon Valdez, yesterday it was reported that large chunks of it are sinking to the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. There it is being ingested by the bacteria that are ingested by the plankton, that are ingested by the shellfish, and the little swimming fish, which are, well, you get it, so on and so on, up the food chain. Which foods that we eat will become totally inedible, if not poisonous? The Gulf presently supplies about one-third of the seafood consumed in the U.S., bye-bye livelihoods, bye-bye family businesses for generations. Hello, skyrocketing seafood costs. Ah, yes. Small government. Deregulation. Ain't they just great? Ah! Drill, baby, drill! You know what happened? The North Koreans sent a submarine. It was a special submarine that they sent to the Gulf of Mexico to blow it up. And you know what else? Barack Obama knew about it. He did. He was in on the plot because Barack Obama is trying to get all the offshore drilling stopped so that his Muslim friends over in the Middle East can continue to sell us oil and make billions. So Barack Obama sent his emissary to North Korea. And they worked out a deal where the North Koreans, using American technology, got in a submarine and came over to the Gulf of Mexico and shot us a torpedo. That's what happened. That's what happened. And now, now, I won't be able to buy shrimp anymore. Hi, I'm Glenn Beck. Have I killed myself yet? I can't tell. I don't know if I've committed suicide. Will somebody help me? Do I have a producer in here? Am I alive? Hello? Am I still alive? Oh, that's just my finger. Brian in San Diego wants me to pass this word about the leak. Mike, the 5,000 barrel per day number arrived at by NOAA, BP, Coast Guard, etc. absolutely has to be utter bullcrap. Here's a simple calculation that exposes the official estimate as so much toxic sludge. I was wondering what the output per second would be of the gusher. 210,000 gallons per day divided by 86,400 seconds per day equals 2.43 gallons per second. Divide that number by 3 leaks, and it's an average of 0.81 gallons per second. No one would argue that putting that much oil per day in the ocean is a good thing. However, that number is a placeholder number arrived at so our government and BP can cover each other's oily behinds. Just for fun, I looked up a pumping system that weighs 26 pounds and has an output through a 4-inch pipe of 10 gallons per second. 10 gallons per second, not 0.81 gallons per second. I don't suppose that a high-pressure oil and gas deposit might muster more than that much pressure through a much larger pipe? Brian in San Diego. Well, I think I understand what you're saying, Brian. Yeah, they lied to us. Yeah, they continue to lie to us, but that's what capitalism does.
Come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Email here from a listener in Hawaii. Kauai John. I hope I'm saying that right. Regarding that vote, the 61 senators who voted no, we don't want to regulate the banks or break them up, and the 31 that voted yes, Kauai John says, Mike, I called Senators Akaka and Inouye, the two Hawaiian senators, because they both voted against the amendment to break up the banks. Inouye's office called back saying he still supports breaking up the banks, and that on next Tuesday, there will be another bill that is supposed to do the same thing, and that the bill they voted no on had too many loopholes. We'll have to see. Kauai John. Okay. Thanks, John. I appreciate that. We'll see what happens. And this is from Sanchez to Senor y Senora Malloy. Welcome to the corporate states of America. You are forced to sign away your rights for the betterment of the corporation, those workers. And the democratically selected president of the corporate states of America wines and dines the banksters and fat cats in the White House while the homeless and undereducated are left to fend for scraps in the filthy streets. My friends are telling me, give the Democrats one more chance. After hearing the story about the sellout Democratic Party senators who gave the banksters another free pass, I fret to see what our supposed benevolent Democrats would do to the sheeple next. Why hasn't the Glass-Steagall Act been reinstated? Why aren't these senatorial charlatans called out on the carpet? The only solution left is outright revolution. Unfortunately, most of the sheeple will never understand the true meaning of revolution. The corporate media will see to that. Yeah, it's getting frustrating, isn't it? And then, Greg, do you want to take some calls? Anybody want to call in? If you folks want to call in, 877-996-2556. Greg in Florida, who's lengthy, or not lengthy, but he's written in quite a bit about this disaster in the Gulf. Greg writes, yesterday I wrote in and mentioned contradictory reports in the media about efforts to cap this, the gusher. That led me to do a more thorough analysis of other reports, and I found this from Florida State University. Dr. Ian McDonald at FSU produced a spill size estimate based on aerial overflights taken on April 28th, over a week ago. The bottom line, on April 28th, Professor McDonald estimates that there was a total of 8.9 million gallons floating on the surface of the Gulf. Based on his flowcharts, that means that on May 1st, the leak surpassed the quantity of oil that the Exxon Valdez spilled, and that there are about 18.8 million gallons of oil floating on the Gulf of Mexico today. Keep in mind, it takes only one quart of oil to poison 250,000 gallons of seawater for all marine life. And then Greg, that's from University from Florida State. And then Greg writes, I've come to the conclusion that the media, BP, and the government are lying their asses off about the extent of this spill. And then he lists an article. I posted a video in this article taken on May 4th of a flyover conducted by an environmental organization in Alabama. My lying eyes tell me it's way worse than anyone has been told. Dr. McDonald probably would agree. When this hits the beaches, people are going to be very angry. I just hope the anger will be directed at the corporations, the economic policies, and the lack of regulations that are truly responsible for this disaster. And the anger becomes a productive catalyst for change. Well, I do too, Greg, but, but nothing. I do too. I hope that's how it will work out. Jack is in Wilmington, Delaware, listening on Sirius. Hello, Jack.
Hi, how you doing this evening, sir?
I'm all right.
I just want to make a comment. I'm a truck driver by profession, but back in 07, I took some time off, and I worked offshore out of the New Orleans area. I've shipped out of Venice before. I've never been on the rig that exploded, but I'm pretty sure I've been by it. And the figure that they're given of like 5,000 barrels a day is probably pretty accurate for the simple fact. I mean,
Well, why then has BP now said that it's much, much more than that?
I'll be honest with you, I haven't listened to a lot of news in the last couple of days.
Okay, well, things have changed dramatically, Jack. Even BP admits now that the gush coming out of that crack in the... And the floor of the ocean is, I don't know what the latest figure is, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70,000 gallons per, I don't know. That's kind of beside the point, though, Jack. The point is the Gulf of Mexico is being destroyed, and it's being destroyed because for 8 years during the Bush administration, for 8 years during the Clinton administration, for 4 years during Pappy Bush, and for 8 years during Ronald Reagan, there was a concentrated effort to destroy the United States and replace it with the United Corporate States of America.
He watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. A couple of quick emails here, and then we'll go to your calls. This is from Tom. Both of these are kind of disjointed, but I thought I'd share them with you. Tom writes, all these things happen at the same time. Oil spills, stock market volatilities, Congress rubber stamping big bank conglomerates by refusing to break them up. Icelandic volcano perking up again. Times Square terror suspect scare. Workers and students rebelling against IMF-imposed austerities in Greece, etc., etc., etc. Tom in Minnesota. Okay. And then James in Minnesota writes, the vision that awoke me from a dream. Do-do-do-do-do. He writes, I have felt ill since the day the rig blew. Somehow the gestalt of this crime in the water bypasses the deadening tools I am poorly equipped with. The deadening tools, like television, I'm poorly equipped with, and dreamed of my skin being pierced by proboscis of a Minnesota-type mosquito swamp attack. Then in the midst of this horrible blood-sucking alien nurturing on me, there appeared a superimposition in the landscape of my body, the looming presence of drill rigs sucking through long proboscis on the skin of the ocean, and I was suddenly nauseated beyond description, like torture, that the huge mosquito had been slapped, and now there my earth lay, bleeding, and I now could only feel that I could no longer do anything about my body illness, laying down to die in my blood. The visage of the huge mosquito comes over me every time I hear more and more. Yikes. James, easy. It's only the earth that's being destroyed. Man. Rick is in Oakland, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Rick.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
I have a comeback to the, you had the, what I like to call Joe the limo driver.
Oh, yeah.
I came from a liberal family and tried to start a business, and it didn't take.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we spoke a couple months ago, and I was talking about when you have to go passive because, you know, circumstances or
yeah.
You know, not knowing what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the active part of it was I spent 9 years trying to start my business.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, let's call him Joe the
limo driver limo guy?
Owner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see if I can pick this apart.
Now, wait, just wait a minute. Just so the audience knows, the guy that called in the other night said he had 9 limos and capitalism was wonderful for him and yada, yada, yada. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, he probably doesn't own any of the limos. A bank owns them.
Mm-hmm.
Second, he's probably, what, 6 or 7 employees. So he's doing a portion of the work. So they do the other portion. And thirdly, he doesn't really earn that income. They, he's if he quotes, like, if he says, well, I make $500,000 a year. No, he doesn't. He's probably quoting the figures before he does his payroll.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean? So I've heard these guys kind of guys call in. This is a Joe the plumber,
yeah.
You know, in disguise.
What kind of what kind of business did you try to start?
I've been a software engineer. Got disabled.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mechanical computer, you know, like an 1800 style mechanical computer for teaching.
I can't get an image of that.
Well, it's instead of having these little micro miniature transistors,
right.
You have objects that are about the size of a Band-Aid box. So, you know, high school kids or whatever can plug these things in. It makes a giant computer the size of a refrigerator, and they can plug things in and get into the innards of the workings of the computer without using electronics. It's all mechanical.
And are you manufacturing these or?
No, I had to quit because of my health and I went 9 years with it, got ripped off by my patent attorney. Got nowhere with the patent office, got nowhere with the small business administration. I don't have very good business skills. You know, I'm a computer,
mm-hmm.
pretty much, you know, software.
Right.
I took the lawyer to the state bar. They did and things like that with my complaints. Got nowhere. It's a kind of a technology you need patent protection.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of relates to the small business. Now, one thing I could say to this guy, this driver guy, to his on his side, I could say, you know, this kind of person needs, you know, is focused on money.
Mm-hmm.
And probably very stressed out. But still, he's going to be the same guy that says, you know, he's going to say that conservatives start the businesses and the liberals suck off of them. Or, you know, the liberals are taking his money. And, you know, I can smell him coming a mile away.
Yeah, well, I had several listeners, Rick, who also could and sent me some very interesting emails about that. Hey, Rick, thanks. Stay in touch. It would be great to see your business arrangement get worked out. Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it. Clay is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hey, Clay.
Hey, Mike. Just wanted to say good conversation on what's happening down in the Gulf. I think what's happening down there is disgusting. I mean, you just look at what we've let multinational corporations do to our country, poison our environment. This is one of the biggest environmental disasters ever in history that man can even think of. And the lack of attention given it is despicable. I think that's tied with a lot of other things going on now as well. As you were saying earlier, the bankster bailouts that have been happening since the fall of 2008 and which continued through 2009. And I think the answer to all these problems that are snowballing right now, whether it be the environmental disaster in the Gulf and the harm that that's going to do, the irreparable harm to our economy, what's going on in Nashville, the flooding there, other things as well, things happening in Greece, is we need a fundamental change in government. We need to get back to meeting our neighbor down the street, taking back our precincts and whatever political organization you can, and changing the way we live and changing the direction our country's going in. I think that everything is connected. And I appreciate what you were reading earlier. That was that really put it together. But I think we need a fundamental change. And I think one way we can do that is pulling the plug on the funding of some parts of the federal government. We've got to put our foot down, say no more military funding, whether that's through state sovereignty or however you want to do it. You know, that's great. But it's time that people start standing up, because this is, you know, you can't take anymore. Thanks, Mike.
All right. I appreciate what you had to say, Clay. I don't disagree with any of it except the state sovereignty thing. I think that's getting way too much attention. It's kind of, no offense, Clay, I'm not saying this about you, but I think that idea is ridiculous. We have a 48 states, contiguous states, here on this landmass. And it's almost like the craziness of having however many countries there are, 200 countries on Earth. That's crazy. That's crazy. When you think, you know, this is where I reveal my inclination towards one world government. You know, to say that we are all different, it depends on how you mean that. Genetically, we're all the same. There is no difference. The differences, if they do exist, between the five or six primary races on this planet is infinitesimal, if it exists at all. To continue, I don't know, you know, the human race to continue to act as though there is a place called, for example, Japan, to act as though there's a place called Russia or England or Canada or the United States or Texas or whatever is madness. I mean, where does that exist? Where do those delineations really exist? Except in the minds of the people who declared, well, we're going to put a border here and we're going to call this Iraq. We're going to put a border here. We're going to call this Mississippi. I mean, that's it. I can't accept that. The answer to the problems on planet Earth is to start acting as though we're one people. And that means one world government. This is the right wing thing that drives these right wingers just out of their goddamn minds. It makes them all see spiders and bugs climbing up the walls. I mean, it makes them insane, right? One world, oh my God, he's talking about one world government. Ah, the bats. The bats are coming. Oh, the manta rays. Oh, Jesus, what's around my feet? We'll be back.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Yeah, I think one world government makes a lot of sense. I really do. No, I don't have a blueprint. But these political divisions, whether they are, Germany versus United States or Mississippi versus Iceland or Alabama versus United States, it's madness. It makes absolutely no sense, as far as I'm concerned, whatsoever. If you look at it in more or less the Carl Sagan kind of way, this little blue dot that we're on, this spaceship Earth. I mean, can you imagine if we were on a jetliner, a huge jetliner, and, these people over here represented one faction that decided what was going to happen to the jetliner, and these people over here decided another faction, and these people up here said, look, we want to punch holes in the side of the jetliner. These people back here said, no, you can't do that. If you do it, the air will rush out. And these people over here said, well, no, the air won't rush out. God will protect us. And these people over here said, no, not only will the air rush out, but cosmic rays will rush in. So they said, okay, well, you see what I'm saying? I'm sorry, I don't mean to get all simplistic on you, but this whole subdivided human race, it's madness. It really is. I'm not talking about sameness where it concerns cultures. I mean, here in the United States, right, we're one nation, or we're supposed to be. That's not going to be around too much longer anyway, but we're one nation. We go to Maine, for example, because the people in Maine have certain cultural aspects to the way they live that we find interesting and appealing. So we go to Maine and we go to their rocky coastline and we watch the lobstermen and we maybe climb a mountain or two, and then we decide, hey, let's go to New Mexico. And we go to New Mexico because of the beautiful deserts, and the people there do things differently, and the artisans in New Mexico and Santa Fe are unique in the United States. And they say, oh well, let's go to New York City. The point I'm trying to make is that political sameness or political unity does not necessarily translate as everybody being the same. To continue the path we're on, I think, though, all you have to do is look at history. Who wants to look at history? But it seems to me, if you look at history, I don't think there's ever been a time in the history of the human race, if I'm wrong, correct me, when the peoples of the planet were not involved in various places of wars, trying to murder each other. Just trying to murder each other, either for religious reasons or for political reasons or for reasons of resources, resource accumulation, or because we like their women and want to get them, or they like our men and want to get them, or it's crazy. So not only am I a democratic socialist, but I'm also a one-worlder. All right, you little trolls over at redstate.com and Free Republic and all these other crazy Nazi, put that down. He's a wrong one-worlder. Oh, no. Oh, yes. I mean, somebody sent me an email. Give me a counter-argument. Give me a good counter-argument. Now, remember, I'm talking about a political sameness. A kind of we're all in this together kind of thing. You know, the kumbaya thing that the right-wingers say. The right-wingers and the corporatists and right-wingers all over the planet, corporatists all over the planet, they understand, you know, keep people at each other's throats. This group over here gets the wealth for a while, maybe a century or two. Then these people over here, for a couple of centuries, they get the wealth. And these people over here get to eat. And these people over here get to starve to death. And that's the way, you know, we can keep everything in a state of flux and we can control. What if everything just worked? What if the best minds on the planet worked to build a sustainable, livable planet instead of what we're doing now? We are ending the life of this planet. There is no question about that. We are ending the life of this planet. I don't know if those of us alive will see the end of it. Meanwhile, the religionists are rubbing their hands together. They're happy. The Christians are going, oh, yeah, yeah. That's the whole idea, Mike, you dumbass. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people who don't subscribe to that madness. So, instead of ending the life of the planet, you know, with our wars and our competitions and our contempt and our fear of each other and our loathing of each other and our misunderstandings of each other and these political divisions, instead of doing that, why not just... why not just work together? You know, why not just work together? Somebody's going to email me and say, well, it's against human nature. Human nature is kill and eat and procreate, right? So, and stay out of the rain. That can't be worked with. Human nature is not modifiable. I mean, we can't come to the conclusion now that we're all smart. We're no longer Neanderthals. We're all smart now. We're no longer living in caves, 95% of us. There are some of us among the human tribe that are still living a very primitive hunter-gatherer lifestyle. But, I mean, haven't we got to the point in the evolution of human beings that we can just say, look, we're on this little blue dot. We're hurtling through space at hundreds of thousands of miles an hour. There are three or four directional forces working on us as we hurtle through space. Can't we just figure out that what we're doing is not the thing to do? Okay, never mind. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. To all you teabag types out there who are saying, you send me those emails that say, well, I was just flipping through the dial and I caught a little bit of your program. Hi. We know you listen every night. That's okay. That's okay. Kellogg, Brown, and Root, the company subsidiary or division of Halliburton, which is a division of Dick Cheney, that has been responsible for the deaths of soldiers, private contractors. It is a filthy company. It's been accused of fraud, deception, all sorts of crimes against humanity. Well, KBR, Inc. was selected for a no-bid contract worth as much as $500 million through 2011 for military support services in Iraq. The Army said, yes, well, you're damn right. The Army announced its decision yesterday, only hours after the Justice Department said it will pursue a lawsuit accusing KBR of taking kickbacks from two subcontractors on Iraq-related work. The Army also awarded the work to KBR over objections from members of Congress who have pushed the Pentagon to seek bids for future logistics contracts. The Justice Department said the government will join a suit filed by whistleblowers alleging that two freight forwarding firms gave KBR Transportation Department employees kickbacks. Yada, yada. Yada, yada. KBR, the Army's largest contractor in Iraq, will review the litigation when it is received and, quote, will continue to cooperate with the government, end quote. That's according to company spokeswoman Heather Brown, her again. She said gifts of dinners, baseball tickets, and similar items would not violate KBR policies, and KBR was not aware of these violations. I know I sound like I have just contradicted myself, but pay no attention. KBR will continue to provide services in Iraq, such as housing, meals, laundry, showers. Showers! That's where you go if you want to die. You step on the metal platform, and then you're electrocuted. Oh, okay. Showers. Water purification. Water purification! That's where you drink the water and you get sick and die, thanks to KBR. Water with scum and crap and disease and worms and garbage, thanks to KBR. Ah, hell yes, hell yes. Water purification, bathroom cleaning. Under the new order, which was placed under a military contract KBR won in late 2001, shortly after the U.S. invaded Afghanistan. The no-bid work order is unusual because the Army, at the insistence of Congress, has, since April 2008, put all logistics orders to bid, pitting KBR against those other wonderful American corporations, Dyncorp International, yeah, and Texas-based Fluor Corp. Yes! The Three Musketeers! Those are great American companies! Yes, indeed! The Army didn't put this work out for bids because U.S. commanders in Iraq advised against it, saying that enlisting a new company would be too disruptive as the U.S. withdraws. Yeah, oh, okay, okay, it'll be too disruptive. KBR, Dick Cheney, Halliburton, the gift that keeps on giving, on and on and on and on and on and on. Well, I guess I should share this with you. Epi 10. I don't know if this is a man or a woman. Epi 10. Hey, Malloy! Subject line is, I just got to spew. All right, put on your raincoats. Hey, Malloy! Just another disjointed rant that wanted to get free from my head. It happens every now and then. Convincing rant now. Okay. I like the singing ex-Wall Street rat Dylan Ratigan as much as any utopian socialist like myself, I suppose, can. But today he pissed me off. Oh, this is written yesterday. He was giving his rap to someone on CNN. Actually, it's MSNBC. About the meltdown in Greece. And after ranting about the everyday habits of predatory capitalists, all of which were spot on, he then ruined it all by saying, that is not capitalism. Yes, Dylan, it is. It's the same lame-ass, oft-repeated argument that all religious people aren't crazy. It's just crazy people who are religious that are crazy, coming from the so-called moderate religious liberals. Sorry, Hartman, Kennedy, Papantonio, I love you guys, but come on. Religion itself, all religion is crazy. Blank, blank, blanking crazy. Lock the lunatics up and throw away the key, blanking crazy. I love analogies, so here's one. Religion is like plutonium, and capitalism is the rest of the bomb, complete with delivery system. Capitalism is bad enough on its own. It really is a sick, outdated, hugely dangerous economic philosophy, but it's the plutonium that's the real worry. There's a point to my rant, and it is this. I know I'm a blank, blank, broken record about psychedelics, but let's face it. Humans fear death. And it is the motivating force for everything bad on this planet. If people would do themselves and the world a favor and take one high dose of acid or any of a number of other pharmaceutical tools that are proven to dissolve fear by making you face it, then capitalism and religion would both disappear from this planet overnight. In my opinion, that is the only thing that will open people's eyes quickly enough to disarm this ticking time bomb. Enacting laws to protect humans and animal rights are very good and much needed things for a functioning society. But unless the fear of death, due, by the way, to religion and religion alone, is eradicated from the human psyche, we humans will ultimately go the way of the dodo. For the next in line, the dolphins, maybe that's not such a bad thing. But sadly for humans, the much-needed critical mass awakening on this planet will never happen because the very system of capitalism slash religion that man has invented will not allow it to happen. That seems obvious to me, but again, it's just my opinion. End of rant. Epi 10. Well, I hear you. I hear you, Epi 10. He sent that the other day, and when I read it, I thought, you know, if I don't read this, and all the energy that he obviously put into writing it, I would feel like some kind of a thief, you know, for all the energy put into it. And he transmitted it to me over the internets. And I printed it off and just laid it on a stack somewhere. No, I can't do that. I can't do that. Steven is in Burbank, California, listening on Sirius. Hello, Steven.
Hello, hello, Mike.
How are you?
Well, pretty good, because Sanchez, reading his email, it snapped me out of my little contemplation of the obsession contemplating oblivion. And then the email from James kind of said, I kind of made me think, well, you know what? An existentialist would just shrug off a thing like that, like it's less than nothing, you know?
So, yeah, less than nothing. Hey, hold on. I got to do a break, all right?
Okay, bye.
All right, let me put you on hold. We'll come back and pick up your call here in just a minute, because we have to take a break in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 seconds. We'll be right back.
primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It is about 22 past the hour. Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that we're no longer represented by the government of this country anymore. It's all corporations now, Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, you get no disagreement from me on that one. I think there are still some members of Congress who would like to change that, but I don't think they're going to be successful.
You know, Mike, it's a tragic day. I mean, I don't know if people really realize how serious this is when, you know, corporate America has, like you say, the stranglehold on us. I mean, we have our, like our pensions. Our Social Security, they want it all, Mike. They want it all. And they have the ability to get it now because our politicians are not going to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we no longer have a democracy. It's frightening. The only thing I think we can do, we don't have the money to fight them. All we have is we have numbers. People are going to have to start mobilizing. We're under attack. And it's the people of this country against corporate America. And that's where we're at.
How do you go about launching an attack like that?
I think it might start from the labor movement, but it's got to start there. I believe that would be one place to start and start organizing other groups to mobilize against this corporate takeover of our country.
But you know, back when 30% of the American workforce was part of the labor agreement, which was about 50 years ago, that might have had some effect. You know, you look at what's going on in Greece. There are three major unions there. It's my understanding. I'm not stating that categorically because I'm not that familiar. But it's my understanding there are three major unions. They're the ones that have called these massive strikes. They're not the ones, by the way, that caused the deaths of the three bank employees. That was by a bunch of anarchists who just set the bank on fire. But we don't have that kind of cohesion in this country, A. B, we don't have the union force anymore. I read something recently that 6 or 7% of the workers in this country are unionized, and about 80% of them are government employees.
Well, we'll need more than just the labor movement, Mike. I mean, I'm just using them as a possibility of spearheading a movement with, of course, we need all the groups. You know, this is a fight against corporate America, against all the people in this country. And that's what we're looking at here. It's not just one, you know, a labor union fight. It's all our fights. But it's got to start from somewhere. We have to mobilize. We don't have the money. The only way we're going to be able to fight them is with the numbers. And then maybe that's the only way they're going to get it. Because if not, Mike, we're just this middle class, and this country is just going to go down the sewer. And economically, this is just going to be the rich and the very poor.
Well, you know, I still maintain that there is a way to do this. It would be much more effective than fighting the power. And Mark, thank you. I appreciate your call. And that is what I've talked about in this program a couple of times. You've heard other people discuss it, and it's a tried and useful tactic. In this case, I guess it would be a strategic move, but it is to simply stop participating. It's what Mario Savio talked about almost 50, was it that long ago? Back in 63, almost 50 years ago, at the University of UC Berkeley. And that is, you know, at some point, the machine, the monster, becomes so aggressive and so poisonous that I'm paraphrasing, but you have to literally throw yourself into the gears to make it stop. Now, what's the best way to throw yourself into the gears of capitalism? It certainly is not to fight them, because they already own just about everything. So the way you do it, I honestly believe this, you stop. The whole country. And this is where our lack of cohesion, we're not like Greece. We're not like Spain. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about their economic problems that they didn't ask for, I don't think. I'm not that familiar with it. We are not, we are a very diverse society in our attitudes and in everything about us. So there is not a cohesion in this country. There really isn't. About the only place in the United States that you find cohesion is in the military. But if there were cohesion, if it could be introduced into our collective consciousness, where we would say, wait a goddamn minute, why are we continuing to participate in their method of destroying us? And if we ever got to that point, then the way to fight, the most effective way to fight, is to not fight. It's this passive resistance of just sitting down and drawing pictures, picking up blades of grass until the machine grinds to a halt.
He hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. This is on the Reuters news wire this evening. Nearly 40 million Americans receive food stamps. That's a new record. 40 million Americans receive food stamps. The latest in ever higher string of record enrollment that dates from December 2008 and the U.S. recession. Food stamps are the primary federal anti-hunger program helping poor people buy food. Enrollment is highest during times of economic distress, yada, yada, yada. The Agriculture Department said one in eight Americans were enrolled for food stamps during February. That's February. This is May. Enrollment has set a record each month since reaching 31.7 million in December 2008. U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates enrollment will average 40.5 million people this fiscal year. For fiscal 2011, average enrollment is forecast for 43.3 million. How's that corporate thing doing for you there, huh? How's that corporate-y thingy doing for you? United States of Corporate America, Maggie Mount Shasta says, I love that new name for this country, so it is all very clear that this group in charge of the whole show are totally insane nutcases. Their greed, their out-of-control technologies, and their war games are killing the Earth and us, yet they're too thick to understand that they and their women and children and grandkids will go down with the rest of us. The real question is, how the hell are we going to get the power away from these freaks and stop them before it's too late? Pitchforks and torches? Well, I just support the idea of the total noncompliance with this stuff. Oh, no. Mel is in Los Angeles. Yes, Mel.
Mike, I enjoy your show. I certainly hear some points of view that you don't hear on other stations on the radio.
Uh-huh.
One question I have for you, though, is while there certainly can be no denying that certain corporations and groups of corporations have done some fairly heinous things.
Uh-huh.
What would you replace them with?
Replace the corporations with? I would anything. Break them all up, just like historically in this country, we have broken up massive corporations because they are antithetical to life. And now it's gotten to the point where they are a destructive force for the planet. Sustainable, low impact, low energy, kind of the Jeffersonian model. That's why Jefferson and the founders warned against corporations way back when they were putting the damn country together. They warned against it. Lincoln warned against it. Eisenhower warned against it. By the way, these are mostly Republicans.
Well, but corporations, if you look at them, are people, you know, running a business without, you know, with an independent board of directors.
No, that's
stock is owned.
No,
by,
no, that's
know,
that's absolutely not that's
country.
That's absolutely not true. I don't know where you live, Mel. But independent boards of directors, that's crazy talk. Tell me a corporation that's done good things here recently for the United States or any place on earth. Go ahead.
Well, I'm a consultant for Lockheed Martin.
Lockheed Martin, one of the biggest producers of death and destruction on earth. And you think that's a good corporation?
Yes, I think they've helped.
You do. All right. Well, Mel, obviously you're insane, and I don't want to talk with you because I have a hard time talking to crazy people. Goodbye, Mel. Lockheed Martin. Yeah, let's use that model. That would be a good one. Lockheed Martin. Death purveyor. Destruction. Lockheed Martin that usually destroys whatever area they build one of their death camps in and then moves on without cleaning it up. Go away, Mel. Go back into your rubber bungalow. Put the electrodes back on your temples. Don't call here again. You're insane. Shelley is in Fresno listening on Sirius.
Hi, Mike Malloy. Lockheed, huh?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Think so. You know, these predatory corporate death mongers have finally punched a hole in Starship Earth. I think it might be all the air's going out. I think, you know, I've been through a lot of stuff. In the Bay of Pigs, I've been through the Cold War, and I never thought we were at the brink before. You know, I'm not that kind of a person, but I think we may be there now. I think this roiling black death, don't they know they're going down with us? You know, you're the only one top. Maybe they'll go down last. They're
going down.
They got another Earth somewhere, like they can pull out of their wherever after this one's gone. They're tethered to this planet.
That's why
you.
Yeah,
you know,
hey,
you're the only one talking about this.
Hey, Shelley, your call is breaking up horribly. We're getting about every fifth word is dropping out. If you can get to a different cell phone location, give us a call back. We'll put you back on the air because, you know, I'd like to hear what you have to say, but it's just not coming through. Okay? Thanks, Shelley. Maggie says, explain more on how we just stop. Staying home and stopping all by ourselves, no one will notice. Maybe massive but peaceful marches that make teabag rallies seem teeny tiny. Well, they are teeny tiny. Maybe you should have peaceful but humongous marches on Washington. Like the days of civil rights, but way bigger. You know, a march coupled with a refusal to participate in anything that corporate America is doing, it wouldn't take long. I mean, how long would it take to where corporate America would say, "Uh-oh, the natives are growing restless. The natives are reacting." I mean, how long would it take in the perfect situation I'm talking about, which will never happen. I mean, don't get me wrong. This is all utopian nonsense because I know it's not going to happen. We are not Greece. We are not we don't have a Gandhi. We don't. We had a Martin Luther King Jr., but we murdered him. So what I mean, in the perfect fantasy, all of us consumers, we're not even human beings anymore. We're consumers. That's all. And we don't really consume. We just convert, you know, this idea of consuming, like we get stuff. We don't even consume food. Oh, there's a certain little part of it we convert to energy, but you know, that we buy all this garbage, this crap, these big boxes of junk, and we consume it. No, we don't. We use it and then convert it into junk. It starts as shiny junk, and it winds up as scratched and dented junk. I mean, that's all. Come on. So we're not, we've been reduced to consumers, even though that's a misnomer. We are users, but we're not, you know, we're not consumers. But the point is, we are not considered to be human any longer. We just aren't. We are. There's a commercial running right now for diabetes, and it's all these different people saying, "I'm not a statistic. I'm not a." You've seen that, Kathy. I'm not a statistic. I'm not a bottom line. I'm not. And I love that commercial. I love to see folks who are in the commercial. I don't know if these are real people or actors, but they are representations of working people. Strictly working people. You don't see anybody in a suit with buff nails. You don't see anybody who lives in a high rise or works on Wall Street. The commercial depicts working people, and they're all saying the same thing. Now, the point is they're talking about diabetes, but it is an incredible commercial. It's very effective in what they're saying. And I wish that commercial could be played into the heads of the ad agency that really wrote it. Never mind. I'm getting too far afield here. But the way to break the machine is simply stop oiling it. I mean, just stop oiling it. It's a massive, murderous, killer machine. And it churns and cranks. And what lubricates it are human bodies. That's all. And that's what Mario Savio was talking about. At some point, when the machine becomes so obnoxious, we've got to throw our bodies into the gears. So, the organization part is the difficult part, you see. I don't think there's anybody in America right now below that top one half of 1% who is truly satisfied with what's going on or optimistic about the future, unless they're mad, unless they're insane, like the jerk that just called me. If you live in a madhouse, well, the whole place is a madhouse, but if you're on leave from a real asylum like that last caller, not the female, but the male, sure, you're happy as a pig in slop, you know. Yeah, hey, I love corporations, man, you betcha. Especially Lockheed Martin, woo! But for the 99.5% of us who are not in that top one half 1%, I don't know how we reach everybody. I don't know how to do it. I have no idea. That's why it's only a fantasy. But that's the only way to stop the machine. The idea of defeating the machine through direct confrontation, fighting it, shooting at it, beating it, setting on a fire. No, of course not. You just have to stop lubricating it. That's all we have to do. It's like any machine. It needs lubricant because there's gears and twisty things and conveyor belts. And it's not run. It's not run on silicon chips. It isn't. The machine, the one I'm talking about, is pretty primitive. It could be stopped.
How to Know God, page 130.
program. I haven't done that for a while. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs person. Bruce Enberg is Prairie 2, economic affairs. Kay Petrini is a school teacher who is our education affairs correspondent. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, kind of, they're kind of like the public editor at the New York Times. They, we call them our ethics advisors. The engineer and the executive producer is Kathy Bay, who is not dead. Did survive the heart procedure. Stephen is in Burbank, California. Hey, Stephen.
Hello again, Mike. I thought I got lost on the large channel and forgotten about or something.
Oh, that's right. You did. Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
No big deal.
The Marge channel.
Well, yeah, I'm just going to listen to the rest of the show. You know?
Right.
But when people like Mel ask the question, what are you going to replace it with, the simple answer is the principles of the Constitution.
Yeah.
Democracy, promote the general welfare, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But like my favorite caller, Dave from Chicago, would say, even though he knows it's futile, there might be somebody within earshot who can hear what you're saying and begin to understand mm-hmm. that the corporations are not democracy.
No, they're not. They are. They are the most clear example of a Soviet-style Politburo that I've ever come across. I mean, you have a ruling group that would be the board of directors. They decide who the premier is going to be, or the CEO, the CFO, and so on and so forth. And the so-called shareholders or stockholders, whatever, they convince themselves they have a vote, but they really don't, any more than the poor bastards in the old Soviet Union. They got to vote too, but it doesn't mean anything. So when people talk to me about corporations running the country, I know that I'm listening to a Stalinist.
For sure. Power mongers and control freaks. It's the same difference.
Yeah.
They think they're smarter, but guess what? They're not. Look what happened in the Gulf. That is not smarter than us.
No, it's not. And corporations will forever. They talk about the government overspending, and I agree that there are a lot of areas where there's probably an awful lot of waste and fraud and graft, like contracts to go to Kellogg Brown and Root. But government does overspend, but government doesn't deliberately underspend. And as a result of the underspending, like in the case of BP, people die and planets get polluted and crapped on. So your example is the one I would go with, what the framers of this Constitution originally had in mind, except for that little bit about genocide, slavery, and women don't count.
Exactly. And that's why they have Article 5 in the main body, and it's called the Constitutional Convention. That means everybody gets together and says, we don't want to live like this anymore. There are better ways to live, and this isn't it. Because it's all about oil, and that's their oil, their power, and they use it to move everything around and take joy and delight in all this death and destruction. The number one consumption area of fossil fuels right now in the world are the military operations in
sure.
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Number two on the list is my 6.5 Buick.
What?
Number two on the list is
your 65 Buick. Oh, my God.
That is a lot. But you know what? I try to limit it. You know, I burn maybe 4 or 5 gallons a month. You know? I have a bike.
Well, that's good.
I have feet, you know?
At least you're being responsible with a 65 Buick. All right.
I am, too.
Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome.
Have a good weekend. Take care. You know, every once in a while, I'm sure at some point, you think, I'm not talking about you conservatives, you're all nuts and crazy and disgusting, but normal people, I'm sure that every once in a while normal people think, you know, it doesn't have to be this way, and I don't care how much money you're making, unless you're in that billionaire class, and even then, it doesn't make any difference how much money you're making. It's how you're enjoying your life, how you're really enjoying your life on an essential level, on a real fundamental level, on a level where you can feel or one can feel joy. I would like to take a survey sometime and ask people, when's the last time you felt any joy? I mean joy. Really, felt good without chemical enhancement to get you there. I mean, just really out of what you were experiencing. And I'm sure people say, well, last Thursday or a year and a half ago or 10 minutes ago. Okay, how long were you able to sustain it? Most people who tell you that they feel some joy, it's very brief, episodic. It's just, you know, like, I don't know, their kid takes the first steps or says the first words. And sure, you feel joy. How long does that last? You know. But what if there were a way to feel joyful and happy and content your entire life? See, I maintain there is a way to do that. I don't know what it is, but it just seems to me that part of that has to do with ending all the divisiveness, ending, you know, what's Mississippi, what's China, you know, what, and just ending it and you know, working together to reach a state of joy, joyfulness, huh? Oh, yeah, you're going to find it in Christianity? You know, pig's ass. Oh, Islam? No, I don't think. Oh, studying very hard and davening as a Jew? No, I don't think so. All this crazy stuff from the Hindus? No, not that either. Oh, never mind. Listen, have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there, whether you're really a mother or, you know, a mother. I'll see you Monday night. All right, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, and happy Mother's Day to you, too. Wherever you are!